Okay, so we were on the bottom of Lamed Tesamid Beis, and we were up to the Hadovdanios. So the Mishnah again was listing those things which you're allowed to buy from a non-Jew, you're allowed to get benefit from, you're allowed to even eat. So Dovdanios, the Mishnah already said, Vahadovdanios, afal pi sheminatvin, ein bohem yishum hechsher mashkeh. So we explained that the Dovdanios are these clusters of grapes that apparently are, sounds like they're oozing some of their juice already because they're so juicy. And the Mishnah says that there's no hechsher mashke involved in them. In other words, even though there's liquid on the outside, but the rule is, in order for liquid to make a food be susceptible to be mekabel tuma, the liquid has to be placed there intentionally, or even if it winds up there, it has to be something that you are happy about. It has to be nichale. It has to be, as they say, b'chiyutan mayim al zera. Yutan dum yod yiten. Yutan is passive, yiten is active, so even though the Torah doesn't say you have to put it there, even if it happens to be there, but it happens to be in the, just as if you put it there, you put it there for a reason, but you would put the liquid on, you would wash it because you want it, therefore yutan also has to be something that you want. So in this case, since these grapes, and this is the key point, the duvdanios are meant for eating. Most remember that in the rabbinic period, in the biblical period, probably most grapes, the overwhelming majority of grapes, I suspect, were slated for wine. There is a reason why the Torah refers to, the grain, olives, and grapes as the latter two as tirosh v'yitzar. It refers to them by oil and wine as opposed to saying zeisim and anafim, because the overwhelming majority of olives and grapes were used for producing their liquids, for the obvious reason that those things aren't perishable, whereas grapes and olives, grapes certainly are perishable. Again, you can dry them into races. They certainly have such a thing. They have dried fruit. That's what they used to do with their figs, by the way. Most of the figs, it would seem, they weren't consumed fresh. The grogros was a major industry in the rabbinic period. They would dry the figs, so you can do that with grapes. You can pickle the olives, but nonetheless, the primary purpose seems to have been to produce the liquid. But in this case, the duvdanios were meant for consumption, and therefore you don't want actually the juices to come out. And therefore the Mishnah says, not only can you purchase the duvdanios, and the Gemara doesn't even talk about it, but the assumption, what's the chiddush in telling us you're allowed to buy the duvdanios? The Gemara's going to...
benefit from the liquid.
Right, and as you don't say, you see that liquid is technically wine, and if the guy is touching it, it's stam yena or yayin nesach. No, that wine is not, that liquid is not, even though it is grape juice, it's not considered grape juice, because it's unintentional, it's not desired. So, and then the Mishnah says, in addition, even though they are dripping with grape juice, afal pi shem natvin, nonetheless, ein bohem mishum hechsher mashke, it's not mashke, it's not machshir, it doesn't make the grapes susceptible to be mekabel tuma, because you didn't want the liquid to be there. So the Gemara, six lines from the bottom, says the following. We have the Vdanios, Apo Pishim and Athos, Ein Bohemishum Hechsher Mashke. Verimini, we have a contradiction. Habotzer Lagas, if someone harvests the grapes in order to press them, so Shamai Omer Huchshar, Hillel Omer Lo Huchshar. Now this is a very unusual machlokas, because it's Shamai and Hillel themselves. So Shamai says that whenever you Botzer Lagas, any mashke on it makes the grapes mukshar lekabel tuma. Why? Presumably Shammai was afraid, since you're ultimately going to press the grapes, you're actually happy to have that liquid on it in some way. That mashke is l'ratzon. And Hillel said no, and then the Gemara says, "Odi le Hillel l'Shammai." Apparently Hillel got browbeaten by Shammai. It was not a good day in the Beis Medrash. This is discussed in the first parak in the Gemara Shabbos. And so that was one that Shammai won. "Odi le Hillel l'Shammai." So the question is, don't you see that if your boats are lagas, that it's mukshar l'kabel tuma? So the truth is, the question doesn't make any sense, as Tosus points out. Yeah, that's Botzer Lagas. You're harvesting in order to press it. Here it's Duvdanios. The Tosa says, the bottom Tosos, the Im Tomar, the Ka'ari Le, by Ka'ari. What was the Gemara thinking when it asked the question? Pshita, the Botzer Lagas Tanan. Okay, so whatever the Gemara was thinking exactly, the Gemara's answer is, Hasam Kaboy Le Mashke, Hachalo Kaboy Le Mashke. That is the answer. Botzer Lagas, you want the mashkim. You want the juice that's going to come out. Botzer Lachila, the Duvdanios, you're not interested in the mashke coming out. You want the mashke to be inside, and therefore it's not L'ratzon.
You don't want the mashke to come out before you get it into the vat.
So the truth is, it seems that they didn't really care that much.
Then you're losing, you're not gathering, you're losing.
I would say the following. For that reason alone, it might be why, it could be, really, it's Gzeira Midrabanan, even according to Shammai. But the reason why they would go Gzeira is because you do want the fruits, in other words, you want the fruits oozing, because it makes it easier when you press to get the wine out. So what you don't want it is necessarily dripping all the way down, but liquids that might be just on the outside of the fruit, if it's not, you're not losing that mashka actually is l'ratzon, and that's why Shammai, and then ultimately he'll say, that mashka is nichale, that mashka is good. You're right, to be losing large quantities would not be good, but to have the fruits soft enough where already it's starting to ooze some of the juice, that's a good state, and that juice you're ultimately going to get, it's going to wind up in the gas, and that's called l'ratzon. Okay, fine. So that's the end of this Gemara. Now we get into a discussion of fish and caviar. So the Gemara says the following: V'tarish she'ena trufa. The second Mishnah of our three Mishnayos said that taris trufa, if you have chopped up fish and you can't really tell, you can't see what the fish were, so then it's no good. Then it's not kosher. But taris she'eno trufa, if you have a fish that is not chopped up, so then you can look at the fish and you're allowed to purchase it from the non-Jew if it's kosher. The question is, what is the definition of eno trufa? So obviously if the fish is whole, that's very straightforward, but the question is, what if the fish is cut up partially? So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanon, eza hu taris she'eno trufa. What is it considered taris which is not trufa? What is the dividing line? Kol she'rosha v'shidra nikar. If you can see the head and the spine, and that's enough for you to identify it as a kosher fish.
Is the spine covered with the muscle and flesh and the skin of the fish?
So it sounds like... So the point of this Gemara is that you can recognize there's a simen the Gemara is going to talk about with fish... based upon the head and the spine. One of the very, very interesting questions, which is going to come up throughout the daf, particularly at the bottom, is how we know the Torah lays out simanim for fish. Snapir v'kaskeses. The question is, are there other... The Gemara mentions other simanim by dogim as well. And the question is, are those simanim truly reliable simanim? Can you rely upon them? Can you rely upon them in order to be matir fish? The Gemara is going to talk about the shape of the head. It's going to talk about whether or not the fish has a spine or not. Apparently, non-kosher fish don't have a shidra, which is interesting. I didn't assume that. I don't know. Do sharks not have spines? I don't know. Then there are other simanim as well, which would be the eggs, the caviar. There are simanim in the shape of the eggs, and there are simanim the Gemara presents for what they call ubre dagim, fish fetuses, really fish eggs. There are simanim that indicate that it's a kosher, the egg is kosher, and if the egg is kosher, obviously the fish is kosher as well. Because the status of the eggs of a fish depends strictly upon the mother fish. And then the Gemara also has, I think, one other simen in terms of the fish, which is how they reproduce. Ultimately, the Gemara goes through a couple stages. Initially, the Gemara suggests that kosher fish lay eggs, whereas non-kosher fish give birth live. I think sharks do give birth live. But...
Sharks don't have bones, they have cartilage.
Do other fish have bones and it's not cartilage?
I don't know, you just asked about sharks.
No, I understand. In other words, the regular fish, what fish have, if I have a trout, is that actually bone as opposed to cartilage? I have no idea. You can ask. Does trout have what?
Catfish has a bone.
Which is interesting because, well, we're going to talk about catfishes, but that was a big... I think catfish is on nobody's list of kosher species anymore, but apparently many of the Balei Tosfos used to eat what would appear to be catfish. But we'll talk about that when we get to the... It's a really, really, really interesting topic. So then the other simon was about how they produce their young. Ultimately, the Gemara says both have eggs, except for it seems that the non-kosher fish hatch the eggs inside them, and the eggs come out live. I think sharks do give birth to live young, not eggs. So anyway, so that's something to be... So there are multiple simonim that are not in the Torah, And it's clear nobody questions that if it has snapir and kaskasas. In fact, I think the rule is kol sheyesh lo snapir yesh lo kaskasas. If you could identify what fins were, what the halachic fins are, then you already you don't even have to look for the scales. But we more likely typically look at scales. So outside of those two simanim, the Gemara gives a number of other simanim. The machlokas harishonim that we're going to see is whether those simanim are really reliable, or are they just kind of a smach? Are they kind of mostly, but you can't rely upon them alone? In other words, are simani beitze dagim really is the question, more about the beitzim, are they doraisa, or are they only midrabanan? Okay, so we will get to that, but for the moment, Rosha has a shape, Rashi says, and Shidra, he doesn't say it that way, but Shidra, if they have a Shidra, if they have a spine, so that in itself is a simen of a kosher fish. So the Gemara says that kosher Rosha v'shidra nikar. Okay, then v'ezo tzir, so the Mishnah had said, v'tzir sheyesh bo daga, and daga was daga kilbis. So Rashi writes the kilbis is gedela me'eleha betzir. Betzir dagim torim. It grows on its own. Obviously, we know that that is not the case. We have generally rejected the theories of spontaneous generation. But nonetheless, that doesn't really matter for these purposes. Either way, the whole point is that this fish only grows in kosher fish brine. Now, one important point here. Fish brine, I think this is sort of obvious. Fish brine has to come from a kosher fish. A brine that is the product of secretions of a non-kosher fish is like the milk that comes from a non-kosher animal. So the assumption is, though, that that if you find a kosher fish swimming in this tzir, that proves that the tzir itself is in fact from kosher fish. Brisa says ve'ezo tzir sheyesh bo daga kosher kilbis achas o shtei kilbios shotetos bo. If it has one or two kilbis fish swimming in it. Now, of course, when my son comes to me and I said, did you read the book? And he says, well, I did one or two chapters. And the question, of course, is the assignment was to do two chapters. And you say, well, was that one chapter or two chapters? Right? Very, very, very vague. So what does the price mean when it says if it has one or two kilbis fish swimming in it? Now, sometimes we say, you know, how many slices of cheese are left in it? If four or five, it means I don't know exactly. It's an approximation. Right? That's the way we use it. But when you lay out a legislation, you know, could you imagine, you know, the law code says, okay, this is speeding. If you're going at above 50 or 60 miles an hour, they can pull you over. That's not very helpful, right? If you're writing down a legal, you know, dictum, you have to be specific. Because as the Gemara says, the top of Mem Amdal of Shari. If it's one kilbis is permitted, so shtei kilbios mi boy. Right, so why do you need two? Right. You know,
it's
one is enough.
If it was one or two, if it was like four or five, you could argue, right, if it was four or five, you could say you can't.
It means you need, there I would say you need a bunch. Right, one or two is very strange.
Exactly.
Which is it that you need? So the Gemara says, so again, hashta kilbis achas amr shari, shtei kilbios mi boy. Right, because you have an extra kilbis in there, you say, oh, well, now it's not kosher. One was good, two was not. So the Gemara says, lo kasha, kan bipsuchos, kan bistumos. It depends whether the barrels are open or sealed. In other words, when you first encounter them. I come into the shop, I see a barrel of tzir, I see some closed barrels, so if I want to buy from the open one, Rashi says, chavios psuchos, lo sagi bechada. One kilbis is not enough. Te ika lememar me alma nafalbe. It's possible, you know, flying fish, somehow, that fish wound up in there. In other words, somebody was carrying, I don't know, a fishbowl with a kilbis in it, and it just jumped from one to the other, somehow. But if, so that's why, one could be just a coincidence. Two is not a coincidence. Whereas if the barrel is sealed, Rashi says, he doesn't spell this out, barrel sealed, the assumption is, then we know that if there's even one kilbis in there, it didn't come out of nowhere, it was there from the start, because it actually was growing in that barrel of tzir, and that means that it's actually kosher tzir.
So kilbis cannot grow outside of kosher brine?
That's the way. That's
so how does it generate itself from the ocean? I mean, is that kosher?
It may be that I don't know, Rashi would say presumably kilbis also grows elsewhere, but the without getting into the question of spontaneous generation, let's assume that generally you do not find kilbis growing in non-kosher brine. I don't know really why then. Rashi says gedele me'eleha, but we know that that's not possible.
Exactly. Why? How does it start out?
What's that?
It starts out from the
ocean. I know. What's
so
that?
Out in the ocean.
Right, and presumably when, and I think the assumption is that when you put non-kosher fish, when you put this fish,
is activated. Maybe it's activated.
Well, if you put this fish in non-kosher brine, it won't survive. I think that's the assumption. So when you find one in there, so normally one is enough, but unless it could have been coincidentally there.
Two quick questions.
Yes.
One, I always thought of brine as a salty, vinegary, pickling medium. Fish, I don't understand this whole kind of fish growing in brine. Do we just mean a water barrel?
Well, so I think the assumption is that they have, in other words, there are juices that would ooze from fish. They might have put the fish initially in some kind of pickling agent, which helps extract that, and then they get rid of the fish themselves. And now all you have left is you see this kilbis swimming in it that they didn't remove, they didn't catch, or something like that. Right. So I don't know how
it's actually brine.
I don't know how strong it is. Right, but I don't know how strong the solution is.
Not as strong as the Dead Sea.
Not as strong as the Yamamel, probably.
Second question, and I apologize for going backwards just for a second.
Yeah.
Why isn't the better kasha on Hillel himself, which is, how could you have thought that these grapes are Makabel Tuma, when we already have it laid out, that if they're for drinking, they are, and if they're eating,
they're not.
Rashi says the Gemara's question makes no sense.
That's
Tosfos. I'm saying Hillel's position.
Why? The assumption, again, remember, you didn't intentionally squeeze the grapes or anything. Some of the juice oozes out, right? The truth is, it doesn't really make that, it doesn't matter whether that juice stayed in or not, right? If the juice had stayed inside the grape and you press it, you're also going to get that juice.
Right.
You know, it's more like a simon of how juicy the grapes are, that it's already coming out and pressing. So the truth is, in some way, Shammai's position is really the Chiddush. Right? Now, you didn't do it intentionally.
Shammai is being machmir.
Shammai is saying that the grapes are already moshel kabel tuma, even though you didn't squeeze them on purpose, just because then mashke, which is no take, because, you know, that's a good thing to have generally, but you don't really need it there. So that's why I think Hillel did not at least initially say that that the grapes were moshel kabel tuma. But later, however, Hillel was browbeaten into agreeing with Shammai, so he accepted that. But that, I think, is a gzera. I think the Gemara Shabbos treats that as gzera midrabanan. It's one of the yudches davar, or I think it's listed as one of the yudches davar. Okay, so fine. So now the Gemara continues. It says Itmar. Rav Huna on the third line. Rav Huna Amar Achetehe Rosh Veshidranikar. He says you need both the head, you need both the simen of the head and the spine, that is nikar. It has to be recognizable that it's a kosher fish. What's that?
The first time we had that statement before.
So we had, the question now is, when it says kosher Rosha Veshidranikar, is that Rosha and Shidra or Rosha or Shidra?
We have it says a vav.
It's a vav. And vav, well, we usually think the vav is the conjunction of and. There are many, many, many cases where the vav is actually an or. Called chelev shor v'chesev, I think va'ez lo so chelu. And those vavs are, it's not that you're not allowed to eat the chelev. If you take some cow fat, cow chelev, a sheep chaylev and goat chaylev and put on a sandwich, that it's us. So you don't have to eat A and B and C, but rather it's A or B or C. So there are a lot of examples in Biblical Hebrew, a lot of examples in Rabbinic Hebrew, where the vav is, you might say, disjunctive rather than conjunctive.
So what Rav Huna is contributing is an understanding of that statement we had before.
Correct. He's saying that the Rosh of a Shidra and the Braisa means Rosh and Braisa. Shidra. You need to get both. Whereas the next line is Rav Nachman Amar O Rosh O Shidra. Rav Nachman is saying no, that vav is a disjunctive, and therefore you need either you can identify the head as the head of a kosher fish, so or
what are they arguing about?
They're arguing about whether
why does one go one way or the other way? What's the issue? Bothers each one?
My assumption is that Rav Nachman felt that there's enough proof from either simon. And Rav Huna was not convinced. Rav Huna thought that the simonim of a weaker nature. For example, one of the stories that the bottom Tosas happens to quote from Yerushalmi in a different context. In the context of the caviar, is that there was an Amora who argued that X was mutter, you know, that based upon the simonim, and Shmuel showed him the caviar of a particular fish which happened to be kosher, and he said it's treif. because the simen didn't match. And he said, Shmuel said to him, you know, I'm not so worried about the fact that you're trafing up a kosher fish, but I'm afraid that you're then going to kosher a treif fish. So I think to some extent, this is all a continuum of how reliable are these sibanim. Nobody would be arguing if it had a snapper and a kaskeses. You know, nobody argues, for example, if it has a snapper, it's not snapper or kaskeses, but everybody agrees that if you see the snapper, that's enough. But because these simanim are not necessarily the real simanim, not the ones the Torah gives, how reliable are they? And Rahuna would seem to be less convinced of their reliability. He requires two different simanim of these non-real simanim, and Rav Nachman felt that either one was actually sufficient.
Well, what is the basis of these simanim? The simanim of snapir and kaskas is from the Torah. What are the basis of these?
It would seem that the basis is observation. In other words, if you look at all the kosher fish and you start to see a certain pattern, you look at the tray fish and you see a different pattern, so that might not be 100% foolproof, but nonetheless,
dare to even do that? They said the Torah already gave season.
Because sometimes you don't actually have access to the snapper because kesas.
So you can't determine it.
So you know, there's always a balance. There's a machlokas Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, and the Tosef and Bechoros about a particular issue. And one of them said to the other, Amasa etamachel nevelus utrefos liYisrael. One said, how long are you going to continue to feed nevelus and trefos by being matir, which is also? And the other one said, Amasa etamachalim amonim shiYisrael. How long are you going to destroy the Jewish people's money? If it's more expensive to get X and it's mutter to buy Y, so by your making them buy X, being machmir.
So it's a financial consideration.
Yeah. And those are very real considerations. Okay. So it's a balancing act. Okay, so in situations where you can't see snapir because keses, I'm not sure it would help, but you know, this is a...
How do you see the head and not see scales?
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
What's that? Maybe that scales aren't with the entire fish. There are certainly fish that do not have scales covering the entire thing. Like when they talk about swordfish, right, you have to look really hard to find the scales. So I haven't examined that fish, but my assumption is that if the swordfish do have scales, they're not all over their head. So what if you would, the swordfish has a pretty distinctive head, granted, but what if you would have a fish like that? What if the fish had been skinned, but the head was left intact with the skin off? Right? So I'm sure there are scenarios in which this is an issue where you can't see the kaskeses, but you can see the...
Did they do away with carbonos one day? Because it was Mechala, the Mamon Shal Yisrael. It was a woman who, who pointed that out? You know what I'm saying. When do you evoke that principle?
So it's a balance. Okay. So Masiv Rav Ukva Barachama, he asked the following question. Uvedogim kol sheyesh bo snapir v'kaskeses, which is a funny kind of question. Right? It looks like he's quoting from a brisa, but he really should just be quoting from a pasuk. Right? You're telling me that you look at the fish and you could determine just based upon the rosh of the shidra, and yet the Mishnah says, the brisa says, and it's a pasuk in the Torah, that the way you decide whether a fish is kosher is not a snapir v'kaskeses, and you're telling someone to look at the shape of the head, whether it's pointy or whether it's rounded and or wide, and whether to look at whether it has a spine or not. The Mishnah doesn't say those things. The Gemara doesn't say those things. So how can you rely upon it?
So he doesn't know about the Rosh Hashidra.
That's what Rav Ukva Bar Chama is challenging them on this ground. He's saying, where did you get to Rosh Hashidra from? If the Brisa only says snapir v'kaskeses,
most of the things that we permit are usually the reasons that we know what we're supposed to be doing and not doing in advance. You said that last week. That the tradition is there. It's just that we're trying. He didn't have the.
So he's asked.
This is something just came out of the scene suddenly. Now Rav Ukva comes around and asks, "What did they do up until the time of Rav Ukva came around?"
I don't know. So his question though is, why is it that you are relying upon? Why is it the Brisa says you must have snapir kaskeses?
It doesn't. It didn't bother anyone. Rav Ukva was the first.
It's possible.
One, so it woke up and it bothered him. It's not according to the pasuk. What do they do for all those generations?
He's quoting a Brisa that says that you have to use snapir kaskeses. So how can someone say that you can rely upon Rosh and Shidra? That's his question. So Abaye says, "Amar Abaye Kitanya hi the ara upamuda the damurei shayel itzmeim." If you're talking about certain kinds of fish where the head's actually, it's hard to tell from the head alone, and it could be either one of these fish or So in order to know, in those cases, to know that these two particular species are kosher, you'll never be able to eat them if you only rely upon the head as a simen. He says that brisa which says that you can only eat the fish with snapper v'kaskesas, kitanya hi bi'ara upalmuda, two specific species of fish, didamu reshayu litzmeim, their heads look like the heads of non-kosher fish. In other words, you have some kosher fish species whose heads are shaped like a non-kosher fish. And if all you do is see the head, the conclusion you're going to reach is that they're not kosher. And in fact, if that's all you see, they aren't kosher. Unless you see the bodies of the fish, if you see the snapper v'kaskeses, then you're allowed to eat them. So it happens to be that sometimes, the way the Gemara presents it here is that you're going to have fish that whose heads look like a non-kosher fish, and therefore you can't eat them, unless you actually see the body of the fish to see the snapper.
So let's say the head looks like a triangle. So you're saying if you see a head like a triangle, you then have
pointy.
Pointy. So that means you see the shidra too.
Well, they don't talk about the shidra. So I'm assuming you just see the head.
You see the pointy.
You just see the head.
So there, you can't rely on the head anymore because it's ambiguous because they're kosher and non-kosher both have it. So then you have to
see the body. Then you have to go back to snapper because kesses. Correct. Okay. So, in fact, I will tell you, by the way, the Gemara has the same thing in Chulin by animals, where there are certain simonim in the teeth of animals that give an indication, where the Gemara says the following, that if they have certain things in the teeth, then you know that the animal must be male gera. It must chew its cud, but you don't. And it's a case where the hooves have been cut off. And they say the following: if you know what a camel looks like, and you know it's not a camel, then you know it must be a kosher animal, right? In other words, but you don't see the simanim; they're relying upon other indicators, A, which indicates B.
Indirect,
right? So there's other kinds of evidence that you're dealing with an animal that happens to be kosher. So they talk about some features of the teeth that means it must be a maligeri, even though you can't. Actually, you don't see the stomachs, right? It's missing that part. You can't see what the animal does. And the hooves are cut off, so you can't check whether the hooves were split hooves. But if you know it's not a camel, because you know what a camel looks like, and this is not... I know what camels are, and this is not a camel. So then you're allowed to consume that it's a kosher animal.
How do you know it's shechted right, though?
What's that?
How do you know it's shechted right?
Oh, it's alive still.
And it has its hooves cut off?
Yeah, you can have the hooves cut off, and it's alive. Right, so you introduce yourself to the animal, and are you a camel? And the answer is no, because you recognize it. So you haven't done shechita yet. In theory, I could say it's also if it's shechuta, but there, if you see it shechted, what it looks like it's nishchat, there may be a chazaka that most people do shechita properly. A, but B, it also means if someone bothered to do shechita on it, that in itself is probably a simon that he knew it was kosher. But the Gemara's talking about when it's alive. You find this animal alive, you can expect certain features. And but you can't tell whether it chews. You don't see it chewing its cud or something like that, and the hooves are cut off.
And having its hooves cut off is not a mum of something.
It's possible it's a carbon, but it's not a trefa. If it's cut off low enough, if it's cut off in the bottom joint where you can't see the split anymore, that doesn't render the animal a trefa. Certainly, I think everybody agrees the lowest of the three pieces of the leg doesn't render the animal a trefa. Okay, so that would be the. So you have situations where Chazal rely upon secondary simonim. And if you see the animal chewing its cud, then that's a simon in its own right. But even if you don't see the chewing its cud, something about the teeth, so that's proof.
Where does the Gemara define what fins are?
I don't know what the Gemara is in Chulin. The main sugyos that deal with kosher, non-kosher species and all the varieties are the Mishnayos at the end of Elu Trefos. The end of the third parak in Chulin, after dealing with Trefos, then lists kosher, non-kosher. And they mean behemoths and chayos, birds and dagim. Well, that's where the sugyos are. Okay, so now the Gemara says, so we have a machlokas whether Rosh or Shidra. Rosh or Shidra, Rosh and Shidra. Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmei De'ula. Machlokas letabel betziran, avo begufan, divrei hakol asur, Ad shehe rosh v'shidra nikar. So the Gemara says as follows. Rabbi Yehuda claims that the whole machlokas, whether you can rely upon just one simon of the rosh or the shidra versus needing both, that is only if you want to dip in the brine that's around the fish. But if you actually want to eat the fish itself, everybody agrees. Everybody agrees you need both the Rosh and the Shidra. Even Rav Nachman was only lenient by the Tzir. The question is, why should you distinguish? Right? You're not sure whether this animal is treif or not. And there's milk of the animal as well. The milk of a treifa is treif. So if you have to be stringent on the animal itself, you should also have to be stringent on the milk. So if you can't eat these fish until you recognize Rosh Vishidra, head and spine, then you shouldn't be able to consume the brine either. Tosus asked that question. He simply suggests, if you take a look at Tosus Dibar Maska, Machlokas Betziran Aval Begufan Lo, Vim Tomahar, it's the third Tosus, V'hot Ziran Nami Isu Doraisa Kedamrinan Hatemeim L'Rabos Ziran V'Rotvan. They darshan an extra, probably, hay, Hatmeim, that not only is the fish usser, but even the byproduct of the fish, the tzir and the rotev, the liquid around it. So why then would the Gemara say here that you have to be machmir? Why would they be viewed? You have to be machmir only on the fish itself, but not on the brine. Tosus answers: V'yishloma devade deraisa tziran aser miu tziran batel barov v'gufan lo batel deberia lo betela. So Tosus says something very interesting and very problematic. Actually, Tosus says that the tzir of the fish is batel barov. However, the fish itself is not batel because it's a beria.
What is a beria?
So what is a beria? Beria means literally a living creature. So it's not clear what does Tosus mean here. When we talk about in Yoredeya that a beria is not betela, it means the following. I have a pot, and a bug falls into the pot, and the bug is whole, and I can't find the bug. But I don't have no reason to assume the bug was broken up into parts. So the halacha is, even though minat Torah, the bug is batel, I can't see it, I can't taste it, it's batel b'shishim, but because it's whole, it's being whole means it has a degree of chashivus, and you can't apply the rules of bittul. The concept of bittul is something is so insignificant that it's not there anymore. So normally the way we determine the concept of bittul by foods, let's say foods that taste different from one another, is if you can't taste, if a little chaser schmaltz falls into your meat and you can't taste it, so then we say it doesn't exist anymore. Why? Because how do you know that food exists? So either you see it, which you can't, or you taste it, but you can't. So therefore we say it's batel, it's disappeared, it's gone. But there are certain areas that midrabanan, they were stringent. Midaraisa said bittul applies. But midrabanan, they said, because something has a greater degree of significance, we cannot look at it as if it doesn't exist anymore. One of those examples happens to be beria. The whole dispute over the New York City tap water and the possibility that there are these little crustaceans, these copepods, in the tap water that might be whole and make it through the pipes, that make it through the faucets, that was the whole issue that it's over. I'm not, I drink unfiltered New York City tap water, and it was a machlokas among the poskim at the OU, but the argument against it, against drinking the water, was that you could take the water and you could see these very, very tiny copepods, seemingly whole, in the water. So there is an issue of the rabbanon then of drinking that water. Now, personally, and again, I don't want to hash out this entire issue. I when this controversy broke, I was taking tap water and looking to find the copepods, and I couldn't find anything. Maybe I don't have rabbinic supervision, but nonetheless, I couldn't find anything. If it were really true that you actually could see them, then it actually would be a real question. It's still not a slam dunk, because the question is whether not all little things like that are necessarily usser. Not all sherets amayim, there's criteria to when it's us or when it's not, but if it were broken up, once it's not whole, if it's missing a leg, then we paskin that it's that you apply the regular rules of bittul, in which case you can't taste it in the water, and therefore it would be mutter. So that's usually what the concept of beria is. So the question is, what does Tosus mean here? Right? In other words, he says there's no bittul for the beria. This is not bittul. If I have a piece, bittul means something is mixed in with other things, and I can't identify it, I don't even know that it's there, I can't see it. If I have this fish, let's say I can't identify it, it's only got a head, or it's only got a spine, and I'm not sure whether or not it's really a kosher fish. This is not a question of bittul, it's literally a situation of having an item in front of me where it's a suffix, whether it's kosher or treif. And it's not a question of bittul. Bittul means the following. I have three animals, let's say, and one is a trefa, but we can't figure out which it is, and as I can't identify it. I have two other animals with it, which are kosher. That's the classic case of bittul. I can't identify where the trefa is. When I have an animal in front of me that, as far as I'm concerned, might very well be treif, it's not a question of bittul. We have a concept of suffix. Suffix you know, ostensibly is a 50-50 suffix or simply an unknown suffix. But that's not bittul. So this Tosus assuming here that what it means is you actually have multiple fish in this thing, and some of them are definitely kosher, but some of them are not, and I'm not sure which ones are not, and therefore beria lo b'teila. That's the only way beria would actually make any sense. I'm not sure if that's what Tosus means. Now, I'll tell you why I think it does make a good deal of sense if that's what Tosus means, for the following reason. There's another problem in Tosus. Tosus says that the tzir is batel barov. Right? Tosus said that tzir, it's not a problem because it's batel barov, the brine, the, you know, the fish juices. However, the beria, the fish itself, is not b'teila, because beria is lo b'teila. So is that really true, that fish brine is batel barov? You can taste it. And it happens to be that the Balei HaTosfos hold that ta'am ke'ikar is doraisa. Let's take the following case. Let's say I take chazer schmaltz. Okay, let's go back to that. And I mix it into my ground beef. And I don't have that much ground beef. Let's say I have 10 times the amount of ground beef that I have of the chazer schmaltz. So now, and I mix it all up. And you know what? I can taste the fat has an impact. I can taste it. Is that usur to eat? The answer is yes. Is that isur? Is that prohibition? What is that prohibition? That's what we call ta'am ke'ikar. Right, and I'll even give you. Let's give you another, not one necessarily. So let me give you a better top kicker case. Let's say I take onions and I put them in a. My wife used it like in a cheesecloth in a little bag, right? And I put them in the chicken soup. Or I take carrots and I put them in a bag and I put them in the chicken soup and I let it stew for a long time and the carrots flavor the soup. And then I pull the carrots out. I pull out the mamushes of the carrots. So there are no more carrots left in the soup, but there's the taste of the carrots. So chemically I understand there are molecules of the carrots, but we can't see them. So that's what we call ta'am. Not mamusho. Mamish means the actual physical substance. Ta'am, only the taste of it. And the question is, we say ta'am ki'ikar, which is shorthand, ta'am, flavor of something, is ki'ikar mamasho shel iser. It's like the actual physical substance itself. So there's a big machlokas harishonim, whether ta'am ki'ikar is da'oraisa or the rabbanon. Right? The Rambam and Rashi hold that ta'am ki'ikar is the rabbanon. The Balei HaTosfos hold that ta'am ki'ikar is da'oraisa. Rabbeinu Tam holds you, we get malchus on it. It's not just usur, but you actually get malchus for ta'am ki'ikar. So how could Tosfos say that tzir is batel barov? So the only way I could explain this is the following, based upon what I said about the fish as well. It means that you have kosher and non-kosher fish in here. What happens if the following case takes place? Let's say I have nevela meat. Okay, they batch the shechita, and I mix a little bit of nevela meat. I have 10 ounces of kosher ground beef and 1 ounce of nevela ground beef. And I mix them together. Is that, now according to the Balei HaTosfos, is that an Issur D'oraisa or not, since I don't have Shishim? And the answer is, of course not. Because there, I can't taste it. That's what we call Membemino. The meat all tastes the same. Some is Asur, some is Mutter. Min HaTorah, when it comes to what's called Membemino, when the two things taste the same, Min HaTorah you follow a Rov. That's clear. Midrabanan, we require Shishim. But there, everybody agrees that Min HaTorah, it's batel barov. So if you assume that what the Balei HaTosfos are working with here is a mixture where there are kosher fish and non-kosher fish, but I can't tell them apart, and even if I know that there were more kosher fish, because I can't identify individual species, therefore, a berry is not betela. But what about the tzir? What about the tzir of the fish? Well, the answer is, I have more fish which were kosher, fewer fish which were not kosher, so the brine, which is mixed together and may all taste the same, the brine, it's going to be batel barov, at least min haTorah. So that's what I understand Tosfos to mean. But it's a little, until now, I didn't think we were working with an assumption that you had non-kosher fish and kosher fish in here, or that the brine was a mixture of kosher and non-kosher. I assume it was either all kosher brine or all non-kosher brine, but Tosfos seems to be reading, maybe because of this line in the Gemara, that the tzir is mutar, but the fish is usur. It must be because we're dealing with bittel here. The tzir is batel, at least min haTorah, but the beria, but the fish themselves, even if you had a majority of kosher fish, and now you can't identify which is which, it's all prohibited to eat because beria is not betela. And what you'd have to do is you'd have to take all the fish out, you take the fish themselves out, and the rest of it you could eat.
This is both in the case where the barrel is sealed and open, and then also, how are we assuming that there is a tom here? There's no expression of tom in the brine.
No, but sear by definition, sear of a non-kosher fish, has taste.
But if you have other...
So I agree. So that's why... Okay. That's what Tosus's answer is, that the tzir is batel barov, because there's tzir of kosher fish in there, and some tzir of non-kosher fish. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the barrel question, I would say whatever scenario that you require, I would say any barrel requires some of this fish, that's for sure. So I would just say that whatever, in other words, if we're talking about whatever amount of fish suffice, you don't have fully intact. Let's put it that way. So you don't have either one or you don't have two, whichever, you know, let's say for an open barrel, you require two. So it's a case where you either had one or zero intact kilbases, but you have others where you have a rosh, where you have either the rosh or the shidra. So the Gemara is saying that that's insufficient because you need to have rosh, if you want to eat the fish, you need to have rosh and shidra of either at least one or at least two fish, just depending on which barrel. But that's separate from this question. Marshall?
This is almost surely a totally stupid question, but, you know, when you fillet fish, and what is actually left is the head and the spine. Everything else actually comes off. When you've got a fish, I did a lot as a child, that's actually what you do. Is there a chance that the reason that the Gemara is talking about needing the head and the spine intact...
You mean because they filleted it?
...is because they actually filleted it, and to show, like in each section, what fillets were in the cabinet, they put, like, a marker of, you know, this is a snapper, this is a trout, whatever.
It sounds eminently plausible to me.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't think that's a stupid question.
Because that's what you throw to the seagulls when you finish filleting. It's a unitary piece that has the head.
What I'd be very curious to know also was whether or not, you know, they then pickled these things for the brine purposes. I can't imagine that, but you never know.
No, it absolutely is true. That's what turns gelatinous, right? I mean, using the spines, and that's the first you gut it, and you take off the sort of the inner dinner.
The cure of Adelian.
Then what's left is very often, right, when you put a white fish back on, right, you take the head and the spine and the tail, and you put the white fish salad on it, people absolutely save that. But there's also a halakha question that comes out of this. Does this mean, you know, this whole thing of, like, they use a kosher knife, they use a kosher cutting board at Fairway, and they tell you, you know, this is a cod fillet, which, you know, whatever, XYZ kosher fish. Is this going to turn out to be halacha lemaisa, that if you're in essentially a non-kosher fish market and you can't actually see the head and the spine, you can't be so enough that if they tell you this is a fillet of a kosher fish that they made for you with the right knife, etc., that you can't be samech on them?
That you can or can't?
Cannot.
Well, I think it really... I don't think the knife and the cutting board is not a problem. If they tell you these are how we cut, there's no question about it.
This issue is, you don't
so I think if you see the rosh and the shidra and you can identify, then presumably the answer is, yeah, you should. In other words, the maskana...
Let's say you call Fairway in advance and you say, hi, I'm coming down in an hour.
Right.
Can you take four red snappers for me with the kosher knife and the kosher cutting board and fillet them for me?
Right.
So by the time you get there, the rosh and the shidra are gone.
So that I think you can't rely upon because you haven't seen... You don't know what they took off of what. In other words, it would only...
Be a chol yisrael
issue. I was just thinking that. Why can't you do what you did with chol
yisrael?
If Fairway's caught putting in a cheaper fish for a better fish or a different fish, that's
don't
a big
we,
problem for them.
Or is it only the cows that you have to be able to watch?
There are two sort of answers to that question. Firstly, one is a metzias. There's in general in the fish industry, there's a lot of stuff which is mislabeled. There's a ton of stuff, and therefore it's not clear how much it would destroy people's reputation and so on. I mean, in other words, what the impact would be. There's another issue as well, which is when it comes. I think that what Ramosha doesn't say, and the Gemara has a concept of mirtas by Chol of Yisrael, and that's being applied. The Gemara doesn't talk about relying upon mirtas in this particular capacity, just stam for the goy to tell you. They don't necessarily assume that. But I think there's another piece as well, which we don't say, and Ramosha doesn't say in the tshuva, but to start with, before you get to the mirtas question, what is the probability in this context that any non-Jew has putting camel's milk or pig's milk in the thing? And the answer we all know is zero. Right? Because essentially, I mean, at least maybe it's different today, 60 years ago, nobody milked anything but a kosher animal. So you didn't even need mirtas. You didn't even really need that to know with almost certainty you would deal with kosher milk. But you fit it within a sort of a framework so I can sort of hang myself on mirtas, because okay, you know, and it wasn't so perfect, right? What are the chances he'll get caught? What are the chances really the impact? But we know it's kosher milk. Right here, it's a little bit different. The Gemara doesn't, you know, sort of present that principle of mirtas. We know that there's a much greater probability that it's some other fish that might look a little like it's not the same thing. So it's much harder. Now, you ask me, in the world of Metzias, do I think in all probability that they're not going to be giving you the fish that you asked for? The answer is they probably are. Does it rise? It certainly doesn't rise to the same level or the probability that the milk you're getting is cow's milk or kosher milk, right? It's nowhere near that. So in other words, it may very well be, in many of these cases, and it's not, the Gemara, like, never articulates this, as far as I know. When in terms of trusting a non-Jew that this is a kosher fish, this is not a kosher fish, it would seem to me that certainly midoraisa, and that doesn't help practically, but midoraisa, there's probably enough to rely upon in many cases with A, why would the guy lie? B, especially if it's an uman lo meira umanase. We certainly have that concept in many cases where we trust an uman because he doesn't want to undermine his reputation. So I suspect that min hatorah, probably that works. But I suspect that midrabanan, given the requirement of two seals, you know, on dog, you know, it's a concern that the Chachamim felt that you could not eat at least flesh of animals that requires, has to be kosher, and even maybe not clear that Chala, I think Chala of Gvina we crossed out from that list, I think we were left basically with flesh. With flesh, the Chachamim required a higher standard of proof, and not just by behema we understand, because A, it's indifferentiable other than based upon the Shechita. By fish, you're already talking about a min, where it doesn't matter how you prepare the fish. Fish is kosher if it's a kosher species. It doesn't matter if it died if you caught it out of the water. So I think that that's probably what's going on.
Candidly, with all due respect, it's not clear to me that it's okay daraisa either, because the concept of uman, I don't actually think translates well to the guy behind the counter in Fairway. Right? In other words, if it was a sole proprietor and it was a serious fish store, it might be one issue, but I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, because the person, again, there's two questions you always have to ask.
He doesn't want to
get caught doing something uman, because he could lose his job.
Right.
So, you know, I think you always, and you, by the way, have to always evaluate for two questions in general in this area. Number one, what is the chance he made a mistake for someone who the stakes are lower? In other words, you ordered something, so he's not going. So one question is he going to intentionally substitute something? Not to trip you up in Isser, but because he's got a cheaper alternative, this, that, the other thing. The second question is, assuming that he would never do something intentionally dishonest, is he going to be as careful, given that for him, he doesn't appreciate or understand the same stakes and what they are for you? So I could conceivably see that why midoraisa might be permitted based upon rove alone. And again, meat is different because meat starts out with a chazaka of not being kosher. I don't think that's true for fish. Now, meat starts out with a chazaka of not being kosher because the Gemara says in Chulin, behema b'chaya b'cheskas isar elmedes ad sheivad alecha b'mehu shura b'manishchata. Once you know the meat was shechted properly, then it is a chazaka of kashrus until you know it's a treifa. But you can't say that first chazaka by fish, because fish doesn't have a chazaka. It could come from this, it could come from that. Behema, even if the behema is kosher, if you don't shecht it, so the starting the fall point of a hema, I said, all meat is treif. That's not true. It's true by fowl, it's true by animals. It's not true by fish, which is why I wonder about the case of fish might be at least menat Torah different. But I think it's clear from the seals Gemara that they seem to place it more in the category of flesh than in the category of other Isurin. Okay. So the Gemara said, Rav Yehuda Mishmei Deula had said, "Machlokas l'tabo b'tziron avo b'gufan devrei akol aser ad shei rosh v'shidran ikar." Okay, so now because of that, so it turns out now that everybody agrees you're not allowed to eat the fish themselves when you only have a rosh or a shidra. The only debate is whether you can eat the brine. So now Amrav Zera may reish hava matabilna b'tziron. I used to. Rav Zera was machmir. He was machmir from Hunashita. So originally, what he used to do was he wouldn't eat the fish, but he would use the tzir. His assumption was that the machlokas was by eating the fish, but everybody agreed you could consume the tzir. Now Rabbi Huda came along and said, no, everybody agrees that you can't consume the fish, they're only arguing whether you can eat the tzir. In other words, we're shifting everything down one level. So Rav Zera said, I used to be machmir, and I only ate the tzir when I couldn't recognize both head and spine, and now came in the Shemana Lay, the Shemana Laha, the Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmei the Ula Machlokas the Taba Btzirin Ava Begufa and Devarei Kolaser. Once I heard the statement of Rabbi Yehuda, then Btzira Nami Lo Matbilna, I won't even use the tzir. Okay, fine. Amar Papa Hilchasa Ad Shehi Rosh V'Shidra Nika Shekolachas Ve'Achas. You have to be able to recognize the head and the spine of every single fish that you're going to eat, which is kind of funny. The way Rav Papa formulates it, because you may be left with the question again, What did he mean? Rosh Vishidra or Rosh Oshidra? I assume in context he meant Rosh Vishidra. What?
He's talking about the fish, not the brine.
Correct, the fish. Right. I am reminded of what I think is a famous Rashi in Chumash. The Torah says that Vayishmu es kol Hashem Elokim mishalech bagan l'ruach hayom. Adam and Chava heard the es kol Hashem Elokim mishalech bagan. The question is, what was traveling through the garden? Was it God traveling through the garden? They heard the kol of Hashem Elokim mishalech bagan, or did they hear the kol Hashem Elokim, the sound of God traveling through the garden? Now, the first one is for Maimonidean, so much blasphemous. God is not walking through the garden, that he makes a noise. Now, it happens to be in Brachus Rabba, there are two different versions, whether or not it's the coal traveling or God traveling. Rashi says that there are a lot of agados in Brachus Rabba, but I only came for Pshuto Shemikra. And then he goes on to say, if you go back and you look in Chumash on that Rashi, he partially reformulates the pasuk, but when you look at the formulation of Rashi, you're once again left with the exact same ambiguity. I don't know if something happened to the text of Rashi, but it's clear Rashi is coming to disambiguate the question of Kol or Hashem Elokim, what's traveling? Because he refers to Brachus Rabba without quoting the Midrashim, and he says, I'm just here to give you pshat. And then if you read the sentence grammatically, the exact same ambiguity exists at least in our text of Rashi that exists in the pasuk. So it's a little bit the same thing here, that Repapa is presumably coming to clarify, and therefore it's still a little bit ambiguous. Now, my assumption when I read Rashi and Chumash is that he means to adopt the anthropomorphic version, meaning he intends to adopt the position that it was God actually traveling, because that's a more pshat interpretation, even though it means that God is somewhat corporeal. In the same way, I assume that Rav Papa here is relying upon the preceding sugya, that he said Rosh Vishidra, he would have said Rosh Oshidra if he meant A or B. And the reason he formulates it the way he does in context is he's literally Rosh Vishidra. Right? He would have had to have said Achei Rosh Vishidra Shnehem Nikar Shokalachas Viachas or something like that. All right. Anyway, now the Gemara says Meisvei Chaticho Sheyesh Paim Siman Bein Bechulam Bein Mimiksasan Vafilu Beechan Mimer Shebehem Kulan Mutaros. So it sounds like you have slices of the fish, and if there's a siman, either all the slices, that it's from a kosher animal, or even in some of the slices, but not all of them, and even only one out of 100, they're all mutter, based upon that one slice. So how could Rav Papa say you have to be able to recognize the shidra and rosh of kol achas ve'achas? One should have been enough. Because here you see a fish slices, and if one is kosher, the rest are kosher. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry. He brought a barrel of fish slices. The nimsa simon va'achas mehem, and they found the simon in one of them. V'hitir Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel es hagarav kulo. He permitted the entire thing. So Tirgam Rapapa, Rapapa interpreted the brisa to answer the question. Kishechatichos shavos. When the chatichos are shavos, what does that mean? So you first read this and you say the slices are the same size. Therefore, what? So shavos means that they line up. It means you have 10 pieces that could come from one fish.
Like
it's like a jigsaw puzzle. This is a topic, by the way, that comes up a number of times in Yoredeya in the first chelek. Let's say you shechted a bunch of chickens, and they removed the innards, and then they discovered that one of them, there was some trefa found in one of the bodies of the birds. And now the question is, you know, let's say... I'm sorry, there's a treif on the head, let's say. Let me give that as a simple example. It's a treif on the head. Now the question is, which of the bodies of the birds are you allowed to eat? Because it could be that it won't be batel. It could be it's a davar chashuv, and you can't apply the rules of bittel here. So they talk about being medamin, that if you can make a jigsaw puzzle on this compelling reason why it looks like this head came from that animal, then you can identify which is the treif body, and then you can keep the rest of them. So this it is certainly an idea that's accepted, and that's what the Gemara is articulating here as well. Okay. So then the Gemara says, "Ihachi, my lememra." What's the chiddush? So the Gemara says, "Ma'ud teimanechos dilma isrami kamash v'lon." You might have thought that you got lucky. In other words, two slices happen to look like they fit together. You know, imagination is a powerful thing. So if you take two pieces and you put them, you're hoping. Firstly, the power of suggestion, the mere fact that they're together makes you assume they might fit, and therefore you might have thought that it just happened to be that way, but it really wasn't the right fish. So kamash v'lon, that in fact you can rely upon that. Okay, so the Gemara continues. very well, hopefully rapidly. Hahu arba the tzachanta the asi lesichra. There was a boat carrying this tzachanta. I think we said previously it must have been herring or something like that. It came to this place. Nafrak Rav Huna bar Chinina v'chaza be'kilfei v'sharye. He saw some scales in the water or something, and he permitted it. Amar le Rav Omika the shariki agavna ba'aswa the shchichi kalpi. So Rav said, how can you rely upon that? It seems the issue was that maybe the scales were there originally from some other fish. They used the same buckets or something like that. How can you rely upon that if it's not upon that fish? Mm-hmm. So, and apparently Tosfos says, all the fish in the barrel were the same species, but you couldn't tell, was it kosher or non-kosher? So Rav Huna bar Chinina permitted on the basis of scales. And Rava said, how could you do that? Nafak Shipuri, the Rava of Asa. Rava sent out a kol kore. Shipuri meant literally the shofar, as he made an announcement that the stuff was Asar. The Rav Huna bar Chinina, sent out his kol kore, Vishari, and he permitted it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a big machlokas. So Amar Rav Yirmei Midifti, Lidi Di Amar Li Rav Papi, Rav Yirmei Midifti said, you know, Rav Papi told me, Kishan Rav Huna bar Chinina, Betziran Abba Gufan Lo. He told me that even Rav Huna bar Chinina never permitted eating the fish themselves. It was just the brine. Amar Rav Ashi, l'didi amar li Rav Papa, ki shar Rav Huna bar Chinina fi l'begufan. So Rav Ashi said, Rav Papa told me that Rav Huna bar Chinina permitted even the bodies of the fish. And therefore, v'ana lo meisar asrina, I will not prohibit it, d'kam li Rav Papa, because he told me it was permitted. V'lo mishra sharina, I won't permit it. The Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmei Deula Machlokas L'Tabo B'Tzirin Abu Gufan Devrei Akad She Rosh V'Shidra Nikar Shel Kol Achad V'Yachad. So basically, Rav Ashi said, I'm not taking a stand. Okay. Fine.
I think this is the birth of the kashrus business.
Possibly, yes. Okay. And one last piece on this before they move on to caviar, which we'll wait till next week, which is Yosef Rav Chinina bar Idi Kameda Rav Ada bar Ava. Rav Chinina bar Idi was sitting in the presence of Rav Ada bar Ava and Yosef Akamar, and he said, Ove kol chavim shehevi areva malea chavios v'nimtzeis kilbis b'achas mehem psuchos kulan mutaros stumos himuteres v'chulan asuros. So he said that if you find an open barrel, you find a kilbis in one of them, and kilbis means either you find whatever is required in an open barrel. Let's say he means two. The Nim says kilbis doesn't mean one fish, it means two fish in an open barrel. All the open barrels are permissible, but the closed barrels are, and that's it. However, if they're all closed and you open one and found it, he mutaros v'kulan asuros. You can't assume that all the other barrels are the same. Amar le minalacha, he said, how do you know this? He says, mitlasa karai shmele. I heard it from three reliable sources, all of whom like getting it from Sukkim, from Karai, from Mikra. Who are they? Me Rav Ushmuel, the Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so that's the end of the story. So the assumption was that sometimes, you know, one part of the batch tells you about the rest of the batch, and sometimes one part of the batch doesn't tell you about the rest of the batch. You can imagine someone, if you know, got on a pallet a bunch of cans that were all sort of sealed in the same thing, in all likelihood, if one has the contents of X, probably the rest of them do. So that's the principle that he is applying here. Okay.